rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all point buttons. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Okay, we got to turn this one off. You don't get the fan today, Lou. And hopefully this other fan won't be as loud and obnoxious as it was the last few days. Been listening to the replays, and there's two things that I noticed. You can't hear the fan, and you can hear me go in between every sentence. I think it's because I got the microphone up too high, so I'm going to bring it down a little bit and see what we can do, and I'll lean into it. How big is the Godzilla? I don't know, 12 inches, 10, 12 inches tall. It's well, look, if you compare it to my head, you know, I wonder what's the size of a human head. Yes, I have got, for those of you that don't know, that aren't catching the video stream, I don't know if it's actually going, I have a freeze frame on mine. But what we're doing is we're putting some of Lewis's toys up, and some of his toys from his childhood, and we're putting them up. Yesterday was Paunch. Yay! I wonder if Paunch and Godzilla could fight. That gives you an idea of the size. Godzilla's about, what, 6 foot tall? Is that how tall Poncherello is? So, let's put him here. We're going to stick him on the soundboard. We're back. We're live. The internet didn't disappear. Martial law wasn't declared. Welcome to the folks in the chat room. We got Warlin, Olima. We got Brian's in there. And, of course, the two Dutches. That's Lou and I. And we're coming to you live right now. It is what? The 20th of August. Man, this has flown by. The 20th of August, 2010. Another day under tyranny, another chance to prepare. Coming to you through the internet here, we are on ubroadcast.com, which is our main feed, through the dutchjones.tk website. We are also picked up on different feeds all over the place. I can't even keep track of them now. People embed this. I know we go out over Facebook. Facebook is the best way to contact me. I keep it on all day long. I'm a Facebook junkie. Because what I do is I sit there and I read news articles and then I post them on Facebook and then I read other people's postings that are involved in the cause. It's become the modern, Committee of Correspondence. It's great to exchange ideas on there with like-minded and similar people and things like that. If you want to email us, you can email us at dutchjonesshow@yahoo.com. That's DutchJonesShow. SHOW at yahoo.com. Oh, Stacy's in the room. Hope you're feeling better over there. Thank you, Stacy. We are also, we have the phone line up. As you heard, if you were listening to the pre-roll in, we were having a little problems with the phone, and Lou did something and it came back. So the phone is up. So you can call. And that phone number is 559-561-8225. I got a couple people said I was saying it too fast, and that may be why they're not calling. But you can call in, and you can talk about what we're talking about, as long as you keep it decent, clean. Don't use swear words. I know we are not attributed or overseen by the FCC, but we do have a code of ethics as Christian soldiers, and we ask that you keep your language. That anything that you wouldn't say to your grandma, unless your grandma's a biker, don't say it on this radio show, because you will be banned. I have banned one person from the show. It's asking me to update my Windows QuickTime. No. Why did that pop up, Lou? That's kind of weird. But no. Yeah, we can't afford a censor. There is no delay on the call-in. There may be. Some information that we're not going to be here today. Well, we're here. Just my warning, I'm not knocking Sir David Andrew at all. I'm just saying I've heard it a lot. It doesn't matter if it happens tomorrow or next week. What I do daily doesn't change, and I hope you guys get that. I hope I'm not flogging a dead horse, but I hope you guys understand that. We perform the duties that God calls us to perform on a daily basis, and we just keep doing it. And it doesn't change one fact of what I'm going to do. I expend the resources that we have as a family to prepare, and I don't speed it up or slow it down because something may be sooner or later away. I give full diligence into the holy cause of liberty. So that was nice of him to call up like that. Minuteman is away. He called me today. He's been, I don't know if he didn't give me permission to say where he is, but Minuteman, one of our regulars, he hasn't abandoned the show. He's just gone on a mini vacation, and he's in a place much more beautiful than Southern California. I envy him where he called me from, a great, great mountainous region in the middle of America that's just beautiful. And he's having a great time. He's just going on and on about how great the people were and how nice everybody is out there, you know, because we're from California. And it's rare for us to get to see other like-minded people. I mean, we have to be at, you know, focal points. We have to be at magnet sites. We have to be at rallies, gun shows, protests, that kind of thing. No, he didn't go to heaven. He did not go to heaven. He's still alive. Minuteman is still alive. I don't want anybody thinking I'm saying he's dead. And not the Ozarks. It was in the middle of America, not on the East Coast. There was somewhere in the Rockies. I'll give you that. He's somewhere between Mexico and Canada in the Rockies. And he's traveling. Alaska? Hawaii? What is wrong with you? You're not representing the homeschool audience too well when you're saying Alaska and Hawaii being in the Rockies somewhere between Mexico. Do you even know where Hawaii is?
Somewhere.
It's in the ocean, yeah. Yeah. It's somewhere in the world, Lewis. Lewis. You disappoint me today. Hey, you keep disappointing me, I'm going to tear the head off Podge. Right here. I'm going to tear his head off. Oh, it's one piece. It's all molded together. I'm going to break his head off. I thought I could just pop his head off like all your Barbie dolls and I pull the heads off and you cry. I like taking his Barbie dolls when he's not a good kid and throwing them in the oven. He gets all mad. They melt. You ever seen a Barbie doll melt and end up looking like a nuclear mutant? I'm just kidding. He doesn't have Barbie dolls. Yeah, there's a game. Where is Minuteman? I should have told him to call in. He knows what time we're on. He should pull over and call in and go, "Hey, I'm in the..." He'll give you a hint and you can guess where he's at. But Minuteman is out there. He hasn't abandoned us. I see Scotty38's with us. Welcome, Scotty, and all the listeners in the Finger Lake region of New York. Still haven't figured out right where that is. But thank you, Scotty. Thanks for being in there. Anybody else come in here? I think we got some guesties. We have a regular guest who's somebody who bailed on us that doesn't like me anymore but won't sign in. I don't know if it's this one or not. But it's funny. Why do you keep emailing and texting me if you don't like what I'm saying? And why do you keep listening to the show? The hypocrisy and the shallowness of some people are just hilarious. I'm not saying that the guest that's in there. Welcome, guest. I appreciate it. You probably came over from Facebook. In fact, I'm getting an IM right now from Facebook. Thank you. Good job, Lou. Actually, it says good jod. This guy spells like I do. And I'm not going to say who you are because I don't want to embarrass you, but my spelling is just nasty. It took me 3 tries to post up on Facebook that we were going live because I kept misspelling everything. And I put the URL wrong, and I did our own phone number wrong. So it took me 3 tries. I kept having to delete it. So I think that's what this is telling me, is that there's a... Ooh. Let's see here. We got somebody named Larry listening on Facebook. Thank you. I don't understand why when they listen on Facebook, it doesn't show them in the U broadcast as being a listener. So the numbers that they give us are not all there, you know, are the true numbers. Not, and I tell you, I don't really care about the numbers, but it's nice to move up. Okay. Thank you, Larry. Yeah. God bless you, too. I'm glad we do the show, and I'm glad you're listening. And you know what I like? I get these emails from, we have a friend in Oklahoma. He and his adult daughter listen. Some guys in Arkansas, an older retired couple living up on a mountain. They just sit around. It's like an old-time radio show. They just sit around and listen to us. I love that. It gives me something to look forward to in the day. I mean, today we did the same old thing. Well, Lou went through all of his toys. There were like, what, 12 or 13 containers? Of those big Tupperware container things. You haven't been through them all yet. You still got some to go. And we're sorting the toys out, some for donations. Thanks, NC. I'm glad you're listening, too. See, there you go. NC's listening over there on Facebook. So good. See, people are checking in. People are checking in. And we found a bunch more cool toys. You know, a lot of stuff that I don't even know what it is. It's like Nickelodeon stuff and things like that. But it's kind of fun. We're gonna throw them all up and try and auction them. See if Luke can get enough money to buy himself something. Maybe get him a hat. A cover up that point on his head. Protect his fontanelle. His fontanelle never closed up. Poor little Lou, his fontanelle's still kind of south. So you got to mind the fontanelle when you're playing with Lou. We got a bunch of practice guns. I mean, Lou had a ton of squirt guns, alien laser disc shooters. I mean, just the freakiest looking stuff. And I can't wait. Next time we have a training, I'm going to, hey, Lou, bring me that training rifle. It's going to look like a laser. He's got a squirt gun that looks like a Luger. Remember the disc guns? He's got some of those. He doesn't remember ever playing with them, but he's got them. So you can own a piece of Lewis history. When we get the stuff up, you can auction, you know, or bid on it, and Lou will sell it to you, and you can have a piece of Lou's childhood. Much like Ponch here, you know, blackface minstrel Ponch. Is it still going out? Are we still doing video?
Yeah,
he can ride on the back of Godzilla. Godzilla! You know what Godzilla means in Japanese? Whale gorilla. I thought it meant big lizard, but I looked it up one day and it was whale gorilla. Godzilla means whale gorilla, because I guess in the original movies he was a mutant between a gorilla and a whale. I have yet to see that movie, and I don't want to see how that occurred. I know it was a nuclear blast, but you get my point. But he's supposed to be a whale gorilla, and to me he just looks like a Komodo dragon. You know, that went bad in one of the, you know, the French testing down to the Bikini Atoll or something, or whatever happened. But Godzilla was one of my favorite movies as a kid. I really like anything, you know, just especially when it was like World War II, you know, era stuff. You know, you think the Americans would have made Godzilla movies to scare the enemy. But I go on. So then the rest of the day today, what I was doing and what we're going to talk about for an hour and a half is this right here, if you're watching the video feed. I downloaded a while ago the entire Community Emergency Response Team manual. Now, those of you that haven't been with us a long time, and if I haven't repeated it enough, I used to be an emergency response officer with the Governor's Office of Emergency Services for the state of California, specifically a couple counties in Southern California. And I would teach people through the fire department and through the GO, you know, Governor's Office of Emergency Services, GOES, these basic survival tactics and how to become a citizen volunteer. It's since gotten way out of control and it's now part of Obongo's mandatory service and all that. And some of it's changed, but I downloaded a bunch of it and went through it today. I worked up a PowerPoint presentation that, no, I'm not going to share with you because we haven't figured out how to do that, how we get PowerPoint on the thing. But this weekend, and I want to get this out quick, if you plan on coming to train with us this weekend, you've got to call me today. You've got to call me or make contact at the church, email me, because I got to, this is the whole packet here. I've got to print these up, and I don't want to print up 30 and only have 10 people show up. I don't want to print up 10 and then have 50 people show up at the last minute, and then I got to send Lou into the copier machine. But the course is going to take just the one module on reacting to a terrorism or mass casualty incident is going to be just 2.5 hours of classroom, which means in reality, when I teach folks up here, just the nature of the militia movement, the nature of these folks, it's going to be 5 hours because of the questions and comments. and I accept that. I don't mind teaching in that theater of the round or circus multi, you know, ring arena. But we're going to go into responding to a terrorist incident, how to triage the situation, how to triage people, what to look for as far as secondary devices, how to prepare yourself, your mind, your body, what's the most critical thing in a, you know, following a terrorist or natural disaster, whatever it is, and just some experience. I'll give you some side notes on things that I've learned, things I've taught, stories I've heard, having never actually been involved in a true terrorist attack. All of my book learning is academic, of course. None of it's hands-on, but I have been to several earthquakes, wildland fires, 100-car pileups, earthquakes, tornadoes, floods, riots. I've worked a few riots, which is almost like a terrorist activity. What else have I worked? Shootings at softball tournaments, you know, those types of things where I worked as an EMT or just as a spontaneous volunteer. And we're going to talk about that, and we'll get into that a little bit here in the next few minutes. But There's a mindset in the professional rescuer that is completely different and completely, it puts up barriers. It thinks that they know everything and that anybody else is just in the way. But the fact of the matter is that most instantaneous disasters, terrorist attacks, the professional rescuers do very little in the first 30 minutes. They take too much time to stage. They take too much time to be deployed because of the incident command system, which I don't have a problem with it, but it just doesn't save lives. It organizes people to make sure they do the paperwork, and it protects the professional rescuer, and there's nothing wrong with that. But what usually ends up happening, especially up until about the 80s, is most rescues were conducted by the spontaneous rescuer, an untrained Good Samaritan type person who just sees the incident and goes in. You know, what does it say? Fools tread where angels dare to go, or something like that. Fools rush in where angels dare to tread. And what happened was, is a lot of professional rescuers who had a heart and that didn't look at civilians as idiots said, we've got to change this. So they came up with the community emergency response training, which would give you some basic skills. It doesn't make you a Ricky rescuer. It doesn't make you, you know, a FEMA search and rescue team member, but at least gives you some basic skills. And honestly, when I first heard about it, I thought it was going to be a joke. When I was tasked by the city council to set one up in the community where I was working, I was like, oh, great. It's probably going to just be, you know, oh, we'll teach you how to, you know, fill your canteens and that. No, it was actual hands-on. It was firefighting. It was light and medium search and rescue with cribbing and jacking and removing people from under collapsed freeways. It was real intense training, and I recommend it for anyone. If you can incorporate a safety wall between you and the current FEMA group, do it. But that doesn't mean you can't just go on their website, you know, just Google Community Emergency Response Team, and you'll see there's tons of them all across the country. And then the federal one, you can download all the manuals. You can download everything you need. They just give it away. And then anybody that's worth their salt can read through it and train people in it. And as you'll see, when we get into a response to a terrorism incident, and I've modified it, I've added some stuff to it, and I've modified it to be natural disasters and, you know, man-made stupidity, not just terrorism like wildland fires and urban interface fires, stuff like that, because those things are more likely to happen, to be honest with you. Most people, up until now anyway, won't have to worry about a riot or anything like that, but that's what we're going to go into, and we're going to do that after the break here when it comes up, but I want to prep your mind for it. And that's the key thing. The most important tool you have is your survival mindset. After your faith in God and your trust in Jesus Christ and knowing that all things will work, God will work for good. But your survival mindset, I don't care if you're out in the street naked, if you don't have a survival mindset, you know, you're dead. I don't care if you've got a full tactical vest full of all the best little gimmicks and tools. If you don't have a survival mindset, you're done. I know with doing like mountain search and rescue, the little bit that I was involved with that, several people just sit down and die. They give up on about the third day. The lack of food, the lack of water, because they have no knowledge base to be able to figure out how to take care of their own basic needs, they start to get delirium in, they start to get stupid, and they just sit down and die. I've literally found a Texas hunter on the back of a horse dead. The horse is wandering around in circles. He got lost hunting, and he just died. They just listed his natural causes, and I believe that was one of those cases where he just gave up. He forgot where he was after about two or three days. He wasn't in great shape. He was a big fat fella, but it wasn't a heart attack or anything. He just found him dead on his horse, you know. And it wasn't in an arid place. It was in the high mountains. There was rainwater. There was snow on the ground. You know, he could have had water, but his supplies were expended. His cell phone didn't work, and he didn't know what to do. So he just died on the back of a horse. But yet, I found people that were in situations where they should have died on the first or second day, but you're on the fifth or seventh day. They look like, you know, death camp survivors, and yet their attitude is everything, you know? And they may have no training at all, but their attitude is everything. And I have to instill that in you guys. And I saw it today. People are like, oh, woe is us. We'll never win this because there's just too few of us that are enlightened and we're all going to die. Oi. Well, I'm like, well, with that attitude, just go out and get shot. You know, just go out. But it's the survival mindset applies to everything. I don't care if it's business, marriage, how you train your kids. If you have a survival mindset, you can get through just about anything that this world throws at you. And just don't sit down and give up. All you folks out there facing foreclosure, facing job loss, if you can't have a strong will to survive, it's going to eat you alive. People are always saying, I got two or three emails today, we love your positive attitude, we love your sense of humor, we love your, you know, how do you do it? Well, I have a survival mindset. I've always had it. It was instilled in me by my mother and my father when I was just a child. I grew up poor. I've always been poor with a few spurts of having more money than I should be allowed to have because I don't know how to manage it. But I always grew up poor. It's always, to me, you know, vacation was going down to the stone quarry and fishing for 3 days with my pa. Literally, it was a Mayberry RFD kind of growing up, but we didn't have any money. from trailer courts to farmhouses to whatever it took. Trailer courts. People don't even know what it's like to live in a trailer. Live in a trailer during tornado season on the Great Plains. That'll give you a survival attitude. That'll give you anybody, you know, during the months that the, you know, is tornado season, being able to sleep in a mobile home on the Great Plains. That's good training right there. I have seen trailers fly in the air. I've seen people fly in the air. I almost had my head cut off by a piece of aluminum siding, and a friend of mine tackled me just as it went by. It would have just burrowed itself in my neck. I've seen the stuff I've seen is for a reason, and I like to share it with you guys. It's not bragging. I don't mean to do that, and if I do that, I apologize. Forgive me if it comes across as braggadocious. I just want to do it to show you guys that even somebody whose life is sucked like mine, I can wake up every morning and smile in the true joy of the Lord. We had that great call yesterday where somebody was talking about how it doesn't matter what Bible version you have, and we ended up agreeing on that. When that Bible is the one that saves you, this guy was in a hotel room. I don't want to belabor the point or embarrass him, but he was suicidal, and he cracked open whatever Bible verse version was in there, and it saved him. He was saved that day. God's going to use some of the strangest situations to bring you closer to Him, because that's how stubborn we are. The flash floods, the riots, everything that I've been through in my life has led up to the point right now, this moment that I'm on the radio, and it'll lead up to tomorrow's, well, not tomorrow, but Monday's, but it'll lead up to this weekend when we're doing the training. And some people, I don't know, I don't try to, I mean, do I sound arrogant? Do I sound rude or like I'm, you know, because I've had some people just tell me they can't take a class from me because I'm just too arrogant and too over the top. And, you know, I'm just like everybody else. Sometimes if I'm exaggerating, it's usually to be funny and they miss the joke. You know, if I tell somebody that, you know, I was in a flash flood situation, and, you know, and I made a raft out of human heads and floated out of the canyon.
You too.
99% of the people there know I'm making a joke, but it's that one person who goes, oh, I can't believe you said that. There's no way that's true. And they usually come up to me after class and go, you shouldn't make jokes like that. That just, it takes the seriousness out of the situation. It's going to ruin your credibility. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, but that's the point. A survival mindset. That's where I'm taking the long road there, but I'm trying to get you guys to have a survival mindset so that you will survive anything that gets thrown at you. And even if you're not going to survive it, you die smiling. You die knowing you gave it your all. You didn't just lay down somewhere and die. Thanks, Stacy. Saying my trainings are awesome. Then how come you're always falling asleep in my trainings? That's why I said tomorrow, you guys are getting trained. I'm just kidding. She got a preview of it today. I showed her my little PowerPoint presentation that I put together, and I think it was pretty awesome. But we threw that up, and I did that in about 4 hours. I don't know, it's like 36 slides. And I got some. At first, it was kind of anti-government. I had like pictures of Janet Reno as Satan, and I did end it with a picture of Obongo as Chairman Mao, because I said Chairman Meow. I said, you know, why do we train? Why do we do this? And I put a picture of Chairman Mao up with Obama's face on it. But yeah, we've got to train. We've got to stick together. We've got to fellowship. And when we get back after the break, and I know you don't fall asleep. I'm picking on you. We're gonna, you know, I'll define mass casualty incident, and after that, I'll be calling it an MCI, a terrorist attack. You know, we'll talk about that. You guys pretty much know all this stuff, but I'm gonna give you just the basics. And one of the reasons, if this is a refresher for you, you need to share it with your family. I know a lot of guys that their wives and children don't have the first clue of what's going on, and what happens when they get whacked and their family's left behind? Not being a very good father, are you? What about your coworkers? You know, you can download this stuff. You know, maybe Lou will. I don't know. I got to find the links again. I think they're on that computer. If you go into the bookmarks, it should be some of the last bookmarks on there, Lou. And maybe you can cut and paste them where you can get these manuals. And, of course, they're insulting to the cause. You know, they talk about, what's his name, the guy that they say blew up the Murrah building. You know, they talk about him being a terrorist, and they talk about 9/11. But you just get around that stuff. Get the meat out of it. Don't worry about all the fat and the sinew that's in there, but get the meat out of it that you can use. Let's see, I'm going through and reading my notes right here. And one of the reasons I might be labored a little bit, oh man, I just got my sweaty finger all over this, and I need to use this as my master copy. Great, I don't have to print up another one. I don't know why my hands are sweaty. That's kind of, oh, I touched my forehead. You guys on the camera saw that. I got to air out my notes. It's getting a wrinkle in it. It's like a scar on the paperwork. It's only the cover sheet. That's okay. We'll go into the different types of attacks. I don't know how many of you... Does anyone in the chat room know the acronym BNICE, what it stands for? A little test here to see if you guys know it. BNICE. Be Nice. B-N-I-C-E, what it stands for. Those are the types of terrorist attacks. I want you to, it's an acronym, and an acronym, I want to see if you guys in the chat room know what it stands for. See what it is. Yeah, Lou's putting those links up there. Training.fema.gov. Training.fema.gov. And there's, if our enemy is our supply pod, there's no reason to steal his training manuals too. There's no problem with it. No negative to it. I said no need. There is a need. Okay, well, here's the music. We're going to be back after the break. We'll talk a little more. I'll push you guys for more donations as we get closer to needing to send some more money out. But everything's going good. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back after the break.
Well, you're my friend. And can you see many times we've been out drinking, many times we shared our thoughts, but did you ever notice the kind of thoughts I got? Well, you know I have a love for everyone I know. You know I have a drive to live, I won't let go. But can you see its opposition comes rising up sometimes? That it's dreadful. Position comes blacking in my mind, and that I see the darkness, and that I see the darkness, and that I see the darkness, and that I see the darkness. Did you know how much I love you? Here's a hope that somehow you can save. Well, I hope that someday, buddy, we have peace in our lives. Together or apart, alone or with our wives, and we can stop our whoring and pull the smiles inside and light it up forever and never go to sleep. My best unbeaten brother, this isn't all I see.
Best conditions, the human body will die after 3 days without water. Having access to clean, drinkable water in a disaster, survival situation, or military action is critical when putting together your survival plan and survival kit. Whether you choose to boil, filter, purify, or use some type of chemical treatment, something must be done when planning your survival escape routes and plans and putting together your bug out bag or simply your rucksack. That's why I have chosen to offer Sawyer brand water filters. These filters used in the medical industry for kidney dialysis exceed the needs for water purification. With different units available, the basic unit that you should get will be capable of filtering up to 500 gallons a day and will not need to be replaced until you have surpassed 1 million gallons through that filter. I know that's hard to believe, but it's a fact. They've been using these filters overseas for years in the missionary fields and in post-disaster recovery efforts. The filters are lightweight and simple to use, so whether you attach it to a 5-gallon bucket, to a water bladder, or to a 10,000-gallon tank, these filters can do the job for you. They can handle up to 40 PSI, and with different fittings and ingenuity, you can even apply them to inside, inline water supply systems into your house, cabin, or survival structure. So I'm asking you to go to djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer water filters. Order them through us. You will save at least $5 off the retail price of buying them from Sawyer Direct. And as always, the money goes to help the radio ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So, do something right for your family, get them prepared for a disaster or calamity, and you're helping us out. So don't forget, djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer brand water filters.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
All for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out all points buttons. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
A new world order.
Attention. This is an emergency. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations.
Everybody. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones. Jones. Radio.
And now for something completely different.
About here, Sensei. About here, Sensei. Okay, I'll put my mic at about 4. Lean way in. See if I can hear myself speak. Okay, we're back. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. It is the 20th of August. Summer's almost over, Lou. Next week, you go back to homeschool. Are you worried? You're worried about the bullies and the romance and the, are you gonna do like a homeschool, what was it, what's that,
musical?
Yeah, homeschool musical. You gonna put together a homeschool musical this year, Lou? No? No, I was thinking you and the other school people. It must be hard being the toughest and the wimpiest guy at school. The best looking and the most hideous. The smartest and the dumbest. It's a lot of pressure for homeschool. Students. I don't know, maybe we can adopt some Ethiopian or something, and then, you know, you'll have somebody else in your school. I have to see about that. Well, I'm Dutch Jones. You're listening to us live today. It is Friday, TJIF or whatever you folks are doing, and it's August 20th, 2010. This is a live rendition of our show. Although, just so you know, just tell your friends, as soon as we hang up and pull out, it loops until the next show starts. So, and it's is this a safe thing for me to do? Especially if you're with your family. Is your primary role just to get your family out of there? Let's say it's an incident in a mall. It's a bio attack in a mall. Somebody releases a canister of spray and people are dropping like flies. Your primary interest is getting your wife and kids out of that mall, getting your husband and kids out of there. You've got to remember numero uno rule is that you and your family's safety comes first. Okay, I see people are coming back in. We're going to continue the training. Guests are back. So remember that. You are number one. If there's any question that you can do it, this isn't Hollywood. You're not Indiana Jones. You're not, what's Mal's name? Mal on Serenity?
Malcolm
Reynolds. You're not Malcolm Reynolds. You're part of the cause, and we need you. Now, we're going to talk first about terrorism weapons. A definition of terrorism. Let me give you that one. Where did I put the definition of terrorism? Basically, the definition of terrorism is a means that entities, individuals, I have it here somewhere, people with a political, spiritual agenda are using to bring you about to either to their way of thinking or to remove you from the location so their people can take it over. Now, I had like all kinds of really good definitions here, and of course it's not here. Now, let's see here. Okay, I got here in my teacher's manual, and I got to bring that up. Okay, I'm just trying to get my stuff together. I should have taken the time we were down to do this. Okay. So you guys understand what terrorism is? It's pretty much whatever they define it is right now in America, but it's someone who targets civilians, someone who targets non-combatants in an asymmetrical way to bring about their will upon you.
Sounds like gangs.
Yeah, it's like gangs. A gang would be an example, Stacy says, of terrorism.
It's like the
mafia. Oh, yeah, I told him about that on the radio, about the gangs that took over the campsite.
Yeah, that's
and anybody listened yesterday, you heard me talk about that up here. So gangs are a form of terrorism. The mafia is a form of terrorism. ACLU is a form of terrorism. You know, they don't necessarily use violence, but they come after you for financial gain. But you get my point. And a mass casualty incident could be natural disasters. I don't want to say God-made. I'm not into that. But hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, landslides, famines, floods, disease, you know, things that just come in that are not instigated for a political agenda. Mass casualty incident can be... the definition of a mass casualty incident is more than the local resources can handle on their own. So like where we are right here, we don't even have an ambulance anymore. They took it away for budget cuts, and it's now 30 miles away is the Exeter, 28, 29 miles away is the nearest ambulance. So pretty much a car crash up here is going to be a mass casualty incident for us. If it happens right now in front of the church and a bunch of us run down there to lend aid, it becomes a mass casualty incident just because of the so-called, you know, civil resources aren't going to be able to come to bear. And it can be a plane crash. A plane could drop on us. I see the chemtrails over our heads all day long. What if a plane crash right here in our community? It can happen anywhere at any time. Any event, any gathering of people, a mall, a rodeo. We have a rodeo arena here. We have jazz concerts, blues concerts, all kind of long hair music up here. Any place where people can be gathered, where something can go wrong, whether man-made or just a storm. I remember one mass casualty incident was a 100-car-plus pileup on Interstate 10 from San Bernardino to Rancho Cucamonga because of a hailstorm and lightning, and the people in Southern California had never, they just didn't know what to do in this big major hailstorm, and one little old Mexican lady up front hit her brakes and caused an over 100-car pileup, killed 7 people. There were more burn victims than we had burn beds in the whole county. I remember just when I showed up on the call, because I got dispatched from my house because they needed everybody on it, and just going up on the overpass in my 4x4 and going, how am I going to get down the freeway? Because it was just both ways were just because the looky-loos on the other side bashed up too. Car on top of car, semis on top of cars. So those of you that are in, you know, massive population areas, the chances of you seeing an MCI, mass casualty incident, are great. Now, of course, terrorism, let's flip the coin, will exploit that. They'll exploit that. Your shopping malls during Christmas season. They could come in and they could do whatever they want to do. They can exploit those soft targets, Disneyland. So you've got to have that mindset. What would happen if you're at the mall, you're at the grocery store, you're at a Christian fellowship conference, you know, Spirit West Coast or whatever? And it doesn't have to be terrorism. It could just be suddenly everybody got bad fish for lunch and people would start dropping like flies, and you're the guy who had the chicken. You're the guy who had the chicken, and you're got to start lending aid or bail. You've got to do the triage. Now, terrorist incidents, you know, you guys all know, tidal waves, whatever. I don't have to explain that to you, right? Are you guys getting this in the chat room? Let me know if you're hearing me. I'm not seeing any activity in the chat room. I must be wrapped on my every verbiage. We used the, before the break, you didn't get to hear it because it got dumped, but those of you that were listening live, be nice, B-N-I-C-E. These are the ways that conventionally, generically, the generalist view of how terrorists attack. Biological weapons. Now, a biological weapon can be anything that is either man-made or it naturally exists in nature, like different poisons. We got the big egg recall now with salmonella. Who knows if that's natural or not? Thank you, Olima.
It's
botulism. So biological entities, things that occur in nature that can be harnessed by terrorists. Nuclear weapons and radiological dispersal devices. The second part is a dirty bomb. Dirty bombs are not nukes. They have a much lower yield. They have a much slower effective rate. A nuclear bomb, you know, the chances of somebody using a nuke, yeah, more likely today than they were during the Cold War. I understand that, but less likely than they would be using a dirty bomb. Dirty bombs are easier to obtain, easier to make. You can do things with... that's weird. Find out, help Mary out there in the chat room. She's having trouble. Let me make sure I posted the right stuff.
Did that help since I got off?
Yeah, it did, but I don't know. Oh, it did it again. It's messing up here. Let me remove this. It's saying that this doesn't exist here. So let me check something here. They're having problems with Facebook. Let me see if I can fix it here. No. Bear with me, folks.
Well, as I was saying, I wouldn't worry nearly as much about the atom bomb if it were to kill you right out. What scares me is that awful gas that deforms you.
Yeah. That would be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, the link is doing weird things. I think maybe Facebook is messing it up. Link to listen live. Thank you, Mary, for telling us that. That's fixed. No, it's not. I just messed it up again. Okay, guys, just give me a minute here. Let me... Thanks, Lou. Link's all messed up. I love this organ music, by the way. Reminds me of roller skating. Okay, give it a second. Okay, take it down. Take down the intermission music. It reminds me of Wallace and Gromit. Take it down. Take it out of there. Nice little fade there, Lou. Good job. Okay, folks, we're going through the terrorist mechanisms of attack, and we're using the an acronym, the device to remember, Be Nice, and we're talking about N, which is nuclear weapon or radiological dispersal device, known in the general public as dirty bomb. Now, you can take medical waste, you can take radioactive waste, you can take all kinds of stuff. Now, the initiator may just be a good old-fashioned pipe bomb, but it spreads radioactive material around. I've been involved in some training scenarios where this happens, and it's nasty. Now, the yield for affected people is much less than a nuclear bomb, of course. And we can go into the possibilities of do they have nuclear bombs or not. I think if they had them, they would be using them. Either God's intervention or their own fear. You know, they don't want to touch it. Getting back to the biological weapon, one of the reasons that those don't get used a lot is because once you unleash them, you can't really control them. So I need to mention that. There have been some maniacs that have used them in subways and things in Japan, but they don't do that. But dirty bombs, I think that's something we're going to see. A dirty bomb is something that some guy can make in his garage if he has access to the medical waste and setting that off. And the higher they set it off, the more people it affects. Incendiary devices, that's a fancy way of saying something that starts fire. Now, arson, fire has been a tool of warfare since warfare has been around. I think a lot of the larger forest fires that we have out here in California that, you know, take out 200-400 homes at a time, do billions of dollars of damage, I think that's an act of terrorism. Now, whether it's a wacko doing it, or it's, some jihadist, or the New World Order doing it, it's still terrorism. Get a good wind going, and for, you know, the price of a match, you can destroy billions of dollars. You can kill lots of people. We've been real fortunate in America. Our wildfires don't seem to kill as many people as they do overseas, and I'm not really sure why. I think it's because we're still blessed to a point, because people are still maniacs. I just don't know why. You know, it seems to be mostly firefighters and the elderly that die. You know, they don't get out, smoke inhalation, heart attacks, and firemen. But incendiary devices are a very easy thing to produce. I mean, you all know how to do it. I'm not going to go into it on the show, but you can go out in your garage or under your sink and boom, you know, you've got an incendiary device, and you can do a lot of damage with it. So the terrorists know that. So that's I, so be nigh. C is chemical weapons, and this is just the nastiest of the nasty. chemical agents, gases, liquids, disbursement devices that'll just, you know, blind you. Mustard gas would be an example. Tear gas would be a lower order one. Tear gas connected with an incendiary device creates cyanide gas in some situations, a la Waco, and they can kill you just as quickly as that. They throw in all the tear gas, then they throw in incendiary devices. That's how they murdered all the children at Waco. Cyanide gas is produced. They know this. They know what they're doing. So that's the C and be nice. And the last, and probably the most used overseas and not here yet, is explosive devices. The as someone said earlier today, the IUD, the intrauterine device. No, the IED, the improvised explosive device. I'm not going to say who said it, but it was funny. It's a funny slip there. Yeah, they're using all them IUDs over there in Iraq. That's a terrorist weapon, isn't it? No, that's an intrauterine device. It's a birth control device that I think was banned. I don't even know if it's still around. But explosive devices. You know what was it in Tremors? You know, just the proper mixture, some common household ingredients. And we saw how effective they are in Iraq. We saw, I mean, the first World Trade Center attack, you know, when they brought that U-Haul full of, you know, it wasn't too good. But properly applied strategically and tactically, explosive devices are basically what terrorists use the world around. We had a car bombing here yesterday in a house lit up with fire. You know, some are lit up with automatic weapons fire. So maybe it is starting here.
Because the gangs are getting bad.
Yeah, well, the gangs are getting bad and the gangs are being connected with, you know, much bigger things and much bigger goals. So that's be nice. Biological weapons, nuclear weapons, including dirty bombs, incendiary devices, chemical weapons, explosive devices, and that's where it's at. Those are the tools. Now, I don't think we have to belabor the point on what, you know, just other natural events are, right? You guys get that? So I'm looking at you broadcast, see if they're saying anything. So hopefully you guys can figure it out. Let's talk about biological weapons first. Biological weapons are found in nature. Some countries, however, have devised ways to weaponize biological agents so that they can be disseminated to affect broad segments of the population, animal populations, and crops. Those are usually the targets. Biological weapons can poison food, water, food production, those kind of things, and ultimately people. Some biological agents are contagious, but many are not. Routes of exposure for biological weapons are these three. Get ready for this. Get your crayon out. Inhalation, ingestion, and absorption. Absorption ones are nasty. The nerve agents combat weaponized different neurotoxins that get through your skin and then attack your respiratory systems. Think of the pictures of the Kurds, what happened to the Kurds, the Christians in Iraq. Inhalation, obviously, ingestion of poisoned food, you know, the stuff the Russians are going around doing with nuclear waste. They're poisoning all the agents that are against them. Now, many but not all biological agents take days or even weeks for their symptoms to appear. It is possible for a biological attack to occur and remain unnoticed for some time. Think about the huge subway systems and transportation systems. Now, it could be as simple as taking a guy, giving him smallpox, and letting him fly all over the United States and infecting everyone. That would be a contagion biologic. I'm not telling you this stuff to make you be fearful. I'm just trying to give you some knowledge so you realize why I tell you guys to stay out of the mass population areas. It increases your odds that you won't be exposed to this kind of thing if you're not sitting in downtown L.A. every day. So it's also possible for some biological agents to spread far beyond their initial point of contamination. As the daily routines of affected individuals broaden the reach of the agents. Now, things like anthrax can be transported on the clothing and the spores can spread. Fortunately, most biological agents are very delicate and are very easily destroyed by heat, light, and other environmental factors. Additionally, the technical complexities of milling agents small enough for them to remain suspended in the air is beyond the capability of most terrorist groups. It doesn't mean they can't buy them. It doesn't mean they can't buy them or be given them by nation states like Pakistan or India or North Korea or the United States, which I think probably gives out a lot of stuff. Let's see. The biggest thing to remember about biologics is that they can be carried on the wind. They can spread through underground water plumes. And here's something, let me give you a peace of mind here. In order to poison water, the dilution rate, it would take a concentration of truckloads into your municipal water system.
Yeah.
He's coming over to pat on me. I wouldn't worry too much about water being contaminated. I'd more worry about it just going bad because it's not treated properly. Oh, and here's a little thing for you. You know, more people die of food poisoning in Israel than terrorist bombs? that kind of defeats what I just told you. But naturally affecting food poisons, contagions, kill more people than terrorists do in Israel. Do you want to say hi?
Hi.
Hey, Stacy's over here now. So that's pretty much that. Now let's move on to the nice portion. I think it's funny that nuclear is nice. A terrorist attack with a nuclear weapon would be much different from an attack with a conventional explosive device. Well, no duh. There would be potential for physical injury and death to persons who were not injured in the initial attack. The affected area would be much larger than a conventional attack, and debris and other usually harmless items would be contaminated. Now the long-term health effects would be more difficult to ascertain and manage. Fortunately, experts believe that the complexities of terrorist groups obtaining a nuclear weapon and maintaining the tolerances for that what are required to have a nuclear weapon are very low. They don't think that these guys are sophisticated enough to have nukes. Yes, they can. But the good news is a lot of those suitcase nukes you heard about, they're like milk. They have a used before date stamped on them. And most of them have leaked out. They have to keep them up. They keep having to reload them. The active ingredients go bad. The mechanisms may stay fine, but just the sheer nature of what a nuclear bomb is, it wears out. Wow, that was quick. We're going to come back after the break. We're going to continue this discussion with Liberty Tree Radio, folks. So thanks for sticking it out. We'll be back right after the break.
No less for God. Freedom's call. And if my be laid down, let it be on sacred ground. It was purchased with the blood of patriots, consecrated for liberty, protected through the generations. Now the future rests with me. This sacred ground deserves my all, no less for God, for freedom's call. And if my sacred ground. Who will answer the cry for warriors? Who will be there, the battle line? Who will lift up a breath of courage? Who will bury die? This sacred ground deserves my all, no less for God, for freedom's call. And if my life be laid down, let it be on sacred ground. If I should die, watch over my family. Brother, shed no tears for me. I will be among the angels who've given all to keep all free.
children, I want you to sit down here against the wall. That's it. Now, crouch tight up against it.
Now, listen, kids. If they're dropping an atomic bomb, it may go off any second now. Whatever happens, I'll give the signal when it's all right for us to get up. If there's an explosion, we'll wait about a minute after it's all over. Then we'll go upstairs and take a look around, see if it's all right for us to clean up. Broken glass and all this debris. All in all, I'd say we've been very lucky around here. Nothing to do now but wait for orders from the authorities and relax.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
All for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all point buttons. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for...
That's Joe's
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Do you think anybody wants a roundhouse kick to the face while I'm wearing these bad boys?
Welcome to the Dutch Jones radio program. Welcome to our Liberty Tree radio, folks. And again, welcome to the folks that have been listening on new broadcast for the last half hour, last hour. We lost the first 37 minutes, but it's in the archives, thanks to Olima. But those of you that are just tuning in for a late night snack of Dutch Jones, the first 37 minutes disappeared. But the training didn't start. Whoa, Lou. The training didn't start until later. Are you still getting, is my email still sending out mail enhancement emails? Batfag saying he needs more info on mail enhancement. Every once in a while, one of our emails gets hacked and it sends out Viagra ads or something, or Swedish penis pump ads or something. I don't know who's doing it. It's kind of funny, but not funny, you know. It's like I keep changing the passwords every couple of days. But they're focused on us, folks. That's what they're doing. Well, especially the folks just tuning in from LibertyTreeRadio.4mg.com. We are talking about a basic approach to response by militia guys, general, you know, spontaneous rescuers to mass casualty incidents or terrorist attacks. Now, my background, yes, I worked for FEMA. I was an emergency services officer. I had a badge and a gun. And I was able to go around and teach people how to respond in the community, and I had a lot of fun with it. And so I've modified their training to fit what we're doing. So if I use the word CERT, that means Community Emergency Response Team, but just put in there whatever your militia group is or whatever your church group is, and you can get away with it. We're talking right now about the acronym Be Nice, biological, nuclear, incendiary, all that kind of stuff. And we're kind of in the middle of talking about nuclear attacks and how to respond to them. And if you were listening, Lou played that little like 1955 government propaganda, you know, school kids. Okay, kids, we're going to the basement. We're getting nuked by Ruskies and everything's going to be A-okay as long as you cover your eyes, stick your thumbs in your ears, and curl up in a tiny ball. The reason they wanted you to curl up in that tiny ball under your desk is so they could identify you later by dental records. The chances of, you know, the response to a nuclear attack, run away! You know, the old rabbit scenario from the Holy Grail.
That's he can leap about. Look at the bones!
What? Go on, boar, chop his head off.
Right, silly little bleeder. One rabbit, two, coming right up.
What does that have to do with what I'm talking about? Huh? The rabbit? Different rabbit. I was talking about the Trojan rabbit. Oh. When they launched the Trojan rabbit, and they all go, run away, when they're attacking the French Kniggets. Not the vicious bunny rabbit that bites off people's heads at the at the Cave of Kyle Arg or whatever it is. Huh, okay. Well, that's good, though. Nice try. You got at least the right movie. Good job, Lou. But, yeah, response to a nuclear attack, get out of Dodge. Don't be the key to surviving a nuclear attack is don't be where it's going to get nuked. You know, where we are right here, unless somebody's got a grudge against hippies, I don't see a nuke hitting Cahuilla, California. San Francisco, yeah.
Oh, yeah. L.A.
Fresno, maybe. You know, there's some refineries or maybe some key strategic issues there. You know, there's a naval air base in Lemoore, about 60 miles away. It might get nuked. The key power to response to a nuclear attack is don't be in one. You know, don't be where they're going to dump one. But that doesn't mean that you might not be on a vacation in Disneyland or something. So you got to know decon tactics. But the fact of it is, with modern nuclear weapons, who knows what's going to happen to you? You're more likely to see what's known as a dirty bomb. A dirty bomb, and we talked about that a little bit. And now we're going to get into incendiary devices. Those are the things that make stuff catch on fire. And this is the I and the be nice. Incendiary devices are mechanical, electrical, or chemical devices used initially to initiate combustion and start a fire. Incendiary devices consist of three basic components. Now, this isn't a catch-all, but basically. An igniter or fuse, a container or body, an incendiary material or filler. And without going into how you actually build these things, which I don't want to do, if you separate these things, unless they're very sophisticated, you can interrupt the procedure and stop it. But that's not your job. Your job as a basic rescuer, as a militia guy, is not to go in there and play MacGyver and cut the red wire. Unless you're trained in destructive device disassemblage, don't touch it. You're going to exacerbate. Your goal is to stay alive and get as many other people to stay alive and get away from the item. Don't touch it. Don't pick it up. Don't throw your body on it. Don't put it in a bucket. I've had people go, well, I was told if you take it and put it in a bucket of water, it'll diffuse everything. I don't know. I'm not a bomb disposal guy, but neither are you. And we'll talk about it a little bit later, but also with these things, you don't jump on your cell phone and start dialing Bubba and going, hey, Bubba, you never believe what I found. They may be triggered by radio waves. A lot of people that are going after professional rescuers, that's what they want to do. They want to get it so as soon as they know the frequency that these fire engines are going to use, as soon as somebody pushes that push-to-talk, PTT, boom. And it's happened. It has happened in America. They cover it up, but it has happened. But incendiary devices, I mean, talk about a low input, high yield if you study it right. Harnessing fire, like I said, has been in warfare since the beginning of warfare. Greek fire, wildland fires, on American soil, they've used fire for all kinds of things. Incendiary devices are relatively easy to make. A device containing a chemical incendiary would usually be metal or other non-breakable material, but not plastic, because many chemicals are corrosive. A device containing a liquid incendiary material would usually be a breakable material such as glass. We're talking about like Molotov cocktails. Now, all these fall under destructive device headlines now. If you get caught with one, you're going to be charged with having a destructive device, so don't do it. Don't be stupid. Don't tell me, hey, I'm going to go out and, you know, put these things together because I'm going to use them against the New World Order. Don't do it. Don't hand them a conviction. Now, incendiary devices, delays, instantaneous, impact, it doesn't matter what they are, they're bad news. They're bad news. They spread fast, they spread quickly, and if the person who knows what they're doing uses them in a proper way, utilizing terrain and prevailing winds, you'll see what happened down in Southern California when arson set those fires and 200, 300, 400 homes go up in an evening. Now, with our emergency command system that we have, usually people don't get killed this way. It's a property destroyer. It's a property destroyer. In combat, when people can't move freely because they're under fire, it will kill people. And just because, and don't think that some terrorist or the New World Order or false flag people are just going to pick one thing from this menu and use it. They may use secondary devices. They may set off a bomb to route you into the path of a chemical dispersant device. They may set off a bomb to scare you into the path of active shooters. Think Mumbai in India. You know, when 10 guys with AK-47s and grenades, 9, 10. I don't even remember how many hunters they killed. You've got to get the survival mindset in your head and be thinking about this. What is the point of it? You're just a mouse in a maze. Why are they setting these things off? Fire is a great instigator to get people to flee. You'll probably kill... Look at what happened with that white... Was it White Snake? Or Great White. It was Great White, their pyrotechnics thing in Rhode Island that killed all those people. Most of those people didn't die from fire or smoke inhalation. They died from crushing injuries because 200 people trying to get through one door. Yeah. Don't put yourself or your family in those situations. You should do a triage, a size up of every situation, even when there's not a threat going on. Nothing's been triggered. You walk into a bar and you go, hey, wait a minute, all the exits are chained shut in here. And it happens for non-nefarious reasons. They may have a high crime area and they bolt windows and everything shut. And there's one, yeah, the Rhode Island Club, there's one single exit. It could not even be terrorists. It could just be bad wiring. Turns an evening out into the greatest horror you've ever witnessed. Thinking about these things will keep you alive. Chemical agents, unlike biological agents, we're at the sea now and be nice. Unlike biological agents or nuclear materials, which are difficult to produce or purchase, the ingredients used to produce chemical weapons are found common products such as petrochemicals, fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, cleaners, cleansers, a lot of things under your kitchen sink. Terrorists can turn these common products to lethal weapons. Now remember, the goal isn't always to kill. The terrorist goal is to disrupt. Maiming thousands of people at one time, a la Bhopal, India, is just as good as killing people because the economic impact it has on the target's culture, you know, political unit, is great. Wounded people cost a lot more than dead people. Now, they may, you know, in any one of these, whether it's a terrorist or a natural disaster, and I'll say natural, you're going to lose resources, you're going to lose income, you're going to lose services. It's all the same thing. The difference is with a terrorist incident is they want to optimize on those and possibly exploit them. Terrorist incidents may, you know, come before an invasion. Serious monkey wrenching, chaos breeding in the streets, you know, trying to get people to riot in the streets because, you know, these terrorist attacks going off could just be a precursor to a major invasion. And you can't forget that. You've got to be on guard all the time. And I'm not saying, you know, be a Barney Fife or a recce rescuer, but your eyes need to be open 24/7. The only time you should be in condition white is when you're asleep, and then somebody in the room should be in condition yellow watching over you. Now, there's all different kinds of chemical weapons, but they come into five different categories, basically. And these are things that I learned from the military, and I'm going to share that with you. Blister agents cause blisters, burns, and other tissue damage. This would be one that's a contact agent. Exposure may be made through liquid or vapor, contact with exposed skin, inhalation, or ingestion. Blister agents include several families of chemicals, including mustard and leucite. That's the one I couldn't remember, leucite. Leucite is nasty. And if I remember right, from some of the scenarios I've done, there's a lot of leucite out there at water treatment facilities in gigantic big tanks right next to chlorine tanks. Not Lewis, but leucite. Not leucite. Leucite, the chemical, right next to chlorine gas. And when those two mix, devastating results. Let's see. The effects of blister agents may be similar to those experienced with riot control agents, you know, CS gas, that kind of stuff, but do not clear upon the movement of fresh air. They're heavier, and they land on items and they stay there. In fact, the effects of most blister agents increase with time and may not reach their full impact for 12 to 18 hours. Remember that. They can last 12 to 18 hours on the battlefield or in the city or in the valley where you're at. And they pool, too. They will drop down into low-lying areas. And this one didn't talk about it, but there's some blister agents that will eat through your clothing. Will go right. And I have no reason to disbelieve. I've heard horror stories that they've got stuff, the New World Order being they and our enemies of liberty, have chemicals that will eat right through your masks. So it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't mean you don't take those precautions, but... who knows? I'm not a chemist, but if it can be dreamt up in science fiction, it can be made science fact eventually, right? Blood agents are absorbed into the bloodstream and deprive blood cells of oxygen. Exposure may be made through liquid or vapor contact with any exposed skin. Inhalation or ingestion. What? Oh, I hear you talking. Blood agents include two main families of chemicals, including hydrogen cyanide and cyanide. Okay, these ones always have trouble pronouncing. Cyanogen chloride. Those who are affected by blood agents may appear bluish across the nose and cheeks and around the mouth. They're apneic. They're not getting air. As the symptoms of blood agents progress, the victim will convulse and lose consciousness. Now, they also have blood agents that are coagulants, which turn your blood into scabs in your very circulatory system. Horrible way to die. And this is the kind of stuff they use on bugs every day. Cancer Raid and stuff, they work this way. Blood agents, they get into the bugs and just shut them down. and just nasty, terrible. These are things used by villains, tyrants, cults, that kind of thing. Choking agents attack the lungs. A lot of times these may be mild, severe, or deadly. They can be used just simply to distract you, so you drop your weapon and they can just walk up and shoot you in the head or take you prisoner. So I get a big kick out of these people that are manufacturing all these less lethal weapons. Oh, we got less lethal weapons so we can have a kinder, gentler military. You know, you're curled up in a ball on the floor with massive diarrhea and you're not going to die until that soldier walks up and puts a bullet in your head because you can't fight back. There's no such thing as less lethal weapons. There's multi-stage weapons. And the first stage may be to drop you with vomiting, diarrhea, and not being able to breathe, but then... set phasers to... All phasers are set to kill. Even if they're set to stun, they can still come up and put a boot in your head and kill you. So don't be buying into this nice new New Age warfare garbage. Choking agents, let's keep going with that. Sometimes the lungs will fill with fluid and you'll drown. It'll prevent oxygen from making it through your system into the bloodstream. Carbon dioxide will not be removed from your blood and you'll die that way. Death results from lack of oxygen, and it's similar to drowning. Two common examples of choking agents are phosgene and chlorine. And chlorine is everywhere, folks. Anywhere there's swimming pools, water treatment facilities, like I said, and lewisite. I couldn't remember lewisite for the longest time. It's funny. It's lewis right there. Lewisite.
No, Lewisite.
Lewisite, yeah. Lewis getting into this. So, you know, that's choking agents. Nerve agents would be number four. They affect the central nervous system. These agents act most quickly and are most lethal of all the chemical agents, acting within seconds of exposure. Victims of nerve agents experience constricted pupils, runny nose, shortness of breath, convulsions, and a cessation of breathing. They just stop breathing. Now, sarin is a good example of this nerve agent. Cyanide gas, those types of things, like the stuff they did on the Waco kids. And they do act instantly. I always thought it was funny in the Army when they trained us, reaction to a nerve agent. You know, how much time do I have? You know, that kind of thing. The best way to defeat these things is to blow them up behind the enemy lines where they're storing them so they act on them, or not to be anywhere where they're going to use them, be one step ahead of them, have good human intel where you know they're going to deploy them. I still think of the Kurds, the pictures of all the Kurds, and how the United States abandoned those people, promised them that we would help them in their rebellion, and we left them all to die. Probably with nerve agents we gave Saddam, by the way. And then lastly, the fifth type, which is, you know, this falls into the less lethal, riot control, crowd control agents, cause respiratory distress and tearing of the eyes and are designed to incapacitate rather than kill. Riot control agents cause intense pain, especially in the moist areas of the body. Common riot control agents include CS, also known as tear gas, and capsium, also known as pepper spray. Now, people do die from these. People with respiratory issues, asthmatics, you know, there's all kinds of... When you get one of these things and you get the training, they taught us that, well, you know, they're not really less lethal, they will kill people. And they do use these at will now, willy-nilly. They'll just start popping them off. We see it at the World Trade Organizations. We're going to start seeing it at Tea Party protests soon. Watch. Tear gas, they love tear gas. And tear gas is the CS gas, is when it's applied to heat or flame, it turns into a cyanide gas. Don't ask me the chemistry behind it. I just know that that's what it does. And so that's it for terrorist weapons. So the last one, C, well, not the last one, but C and B, nice, is conventional explosives. So it's explosives. So it's that's the E, rather. Have been the weapon of choice for most terrorists who have used them in more than 80% of the attacks. While terrorists have used military munitions such as grenades, mortars, and shoulder-fired surface-to-air missiles, the RPG would be a good example of a shoulder-launched weapon. Experts rate conventional explosives in the form of improvised explosive devices, IEDs, as a greater threat. Now, IEDs include any device that is created in an improvised manner, incorporating explosives or other materials designed to destroy, disfigure, distract, or harass. Most bombs used by terrorists are improvised. The raw materials required for many explosives can be purchased commercially. Ammonium nitrate, which is also used as fertilizer, we all know that. Purchased from commercial blasting companies or developed using readily available household ingredients. You know, it's always good to have a good chemist in your militia. Just don't let them do anything now. Now, explosive devices, we all know the stories, suicide bombers laying in wait, remote triggered, sensor triggered, booby traps, all that. So you got to be aware of that. And right now in America, we don't see a lot of that. We did in the 70s, 60s and 70s, Weather Underground, blowing up police stations, recruiting stations, radio control bombs, motion sensors, you know, that kind of stuff. It's a whole world you just don't want to mess with. And again, I implore you, even if you think you're MacGyver, leave them alone, mark the area, get safe, get away. Like one of the best things to do, like with a chemical agent, 1,500 feet minimum away, uphill, upwind. And then when you think you're back far enough, double the distance. Then you get out your cell phone, you get out your communication device, and you say, hey, nobody go near the milk barn. We're sweeping this area. We found a destructive device in there. We don't know what it is. And if you have a destructive device text, then you send them in. I can't tell you how many times I've seen in, you know, situations that didn't turn out to be actual, obviously, terrorist incidents, whereas an MP or somebody, I said, hey, there's a suitcase left unattended over there, and my supervisors go and pick it up and shake it. The stupidity in the public safety arena is just huge. I've had tons of training, but even before that, I knew you don't do that. Even just from watching Mod Squad or any other thing that I grew up, the cop movies, you leave stuff alone. There's a video, training video out there that they showed us where this cop in New York City, there's like a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket out in front of a building, and he walks up, bends over, and just starts to key his radio, and it goes off and takes him out. They showed us that video in the destructive device class that I got through the county fire I worked for. Just the stupidity of it. Something's emitting a liquid or a mist. You don't walk up and, you know, like they always do in the movies with the drugs, they rub it on their gums and go, ooh, that's some good heroin. You know, I have seen, as a civilian security officer, at a Hewlett, at an HP factory, there were these big 30-gallon drums leaking a fluid. And I walk up there with my supervisor, a female security officer, I go, look, there's something leaking over there out of that barrel. She walks up, rubs her fingers through it, brings it to her nose, and is immediately knocked out. Now, she didn't die. I don't even remember what the chemical was, but I immediately ran and hit the fire alarm and got out of there. I left her there. I didn't drag her out. I was like, why'd you dress her out? I said, you see what happened to her? Do you want me to be next? I was 30 feet back when she did that stupidity. That's you know, I don't believe in natural selection, but that's a gene pool argument right there. Just go up, bend down, and go, what's this? One, are you trained to identify caustic liquids by the smell? And it's something they were using to etch circuit boards. So I still to this day don't remember what it was. They told me, but I wouldn't remember it. You've got to have a survival mindset in these things. Whatever the effect is, whatever the device is that's being reached against, you know, launched against you. Let's take it on the other side of the coin. Let's just say it's a natural disaster. You're in Southern California, you know, you've been to Disneyland, you've been to Knott's Berry Farm, and now you're at one of the giant malls down there. And you get a 7.2 earthquake that just nails this tilt-up building, you know, poor workmanship. It's just a metal suspended roof, and the whole thing's shaking, and everything's starting to come down. You're in the food court. You see an exit. You get your family out. You hear screams for help. What do you do? What do you do? What are you required to do? As a Christian, you took care of your family. You did what was right. These aren't your kin. You're visiting California. But let's say you make that decision to be a spontaneous rescuer. From a safe distance, you do a 360-degree search of the entrance. You look to see, is anything falling down? Any fallen wires? Any fluids? Any liquids on the ground? You know, and you know, you never know what it is. You don't know what's stored in these malls anymore. You know, it could have been a 50-gallon drum of some floor cleaner that's flammable, just got knocked out of the janitor's closet, and is now soaked up on the front entrance right there by the food court, and you're getting ready to walk in, and there's sparks coming, and you're going to get engulfed. So you check the entrance, you look up, you look down, you do a triage of the building, you do a 360 size up. You get a little closer, you listen, you smell, you feel, you see if you feel heat. Is there a fire going on in there? Now your time may be short, there may be a follow-up earthquake and it's going to fall in. The first level of triage that you do, standing outside, you make sure there's nothing above your head, you look in, lights are probably out, emergency lights are on, people are screaming, dust is going, and you do this. Iocane powder. And you look at them and you say, if you can hear my voice, come to the sound of okay. Let me know, are we recording?
Yeah.
Okay, folks, I think we're back up. We just got knocked off again. Boy. Maybe he was partially right. Sir David was partially right yesterday, said when the internet was going to go down. It was only going to go down like in spurts. Okay, I got to stop my stuff over here from rolling. Got to pause it. Here we go. Good. We are back up. We're talking about sizing up a disaster situation. And if you were listening, hopefully the lag. Huh? We got a break coming up right now?
Yeah,
go ahead and let's just get a little break. And we come back, I'm going to talk to you about that decision you're going to have to make at that front door of that mall that's collapsing.
Protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points, bum. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, I think it's on. Last half hour here, the 20th of August episode of the Dutch Jones Radio Program. We're knocked off the air twice. At our end. It's probably Lou's computer because I didn't get knocked off. I think it's Lou's computer doing something. We got to go through and strip it and clean it and brush it. And he's just putting too much. He's been playing Tetris over there. He didn't even know what Tetris is.
Yeah, I do.
Today on the Dutch Jones Radio Program, we're going to get right back into it. We're discussing your reaction to a mass casualty incident or a terrorist attack and what you need to be thinking about. If you're just joining in now, go back through the archives and listen to it. I'm sharing with you a mixture of my military training and the FEMA training that I used to give out when I was an emergency services officer for FEMA back in the 90s. Okay, folks, so the scenario is you're at a mall, earthquake hits, Southern California, you're on vacation. I don't care. People go, I live in Iowa, what are you going to worry about? Well, you're out here on vacation. You're spending your money at Disneyland. You've approached the building, you've done a good assessment, you've checked the entrance to make sure there's nothing else going to fall on you, at least in the immediate future, no down wires, no flammable liquids about, people are coming out, you've done a first level of triage by just shouting at them, saying, if you can hear the sound of my voice and you can move, follow this way, come this way, come this way. And as people come out, you kind of set them, you know, direct them to a safe area away with no overhead power lines where they can sit down and await the authorities. Now, if there's more of you still walking around and you're a delegating kind of guy, you can say, hey, take care of these people. You start to triage people. If they can walk, they're probably going to live a little bit longer than just a couple minutes. If they're completely fine, you may even try to deputize them and stop. What did you see in there? How many people are down? Are there a lot of wounded? And you go only as far as you feel safe to go in, especially in an earthquake scenario. In any scenario, it could have been an explosion. Secondary collapse is the leading cause of death of firefighters other than heart attacks on the treadmill. Or being shot by their ex-wives. Secondary collapse means the structure is weakened either by fire, explosion, earthquakes, and they're in there doing their thing, and they get target-focused on putting that fire out or rescuing civilians, and the building falls on them and kills them, and they're pinned, and they succumb to the heat and fire and the smoke and the terrible way to die. So be very aware of that. Look at the structure. Listen to the structure. Watch if it's moving. But let's say you make that decision, you're going to go in. You do what's called a right-hand search. If visibility is low because of dust and debris, this is the best way you can do it. You go in and you go right. And you follow that wall. You keep one hand on that wall at all times. You go low if you have to. Remember the stop, drop, and roll, or stay below the fire line. Even if there is no smoke, and this was an explosion and the debris is leveled, you stick to that right-hand wall and you do a right-hand search. You only search as far away as you can reach while you're still maintaining contact with that wall. The reason you do that is if you have to bug out, there's another earthquake, a secondary bomb, an active shooter comes in, you got to find that exit and you know that your hand's on that wall. Let's do this here. Okay, who do we got?
Hey, it's Rocky.
Hey, Rocky, what's up? You're not even listening.
Oh, I'm going down the road here.
Okay, what are you calling about? What do you want to talk about?
Oh, I don't know what the conversation was. I can't even hear what's going on tonight.
We're talking about response to a terrorist attack.
Oh, well, you know, I want to call in with the Rocky O'Ranger tip of the day.
Okay, go ahead.
How about watches? You know, my watch is a dial watch, and I really suggest those over a digital.
Okay.
The digital makes noise, and you're trying to be stealthy. They beep, and you know they. And the dial ones, they can see the hands, and you can actually calculate your time better.
Plus, it looks
cool. That's my little tip of the day.
Okay, well, there you go. Rocky Hill says get yourself a hand sweep watch. That's Rocky Hill's. Yeah, we need some theme music for this. Do you have that song, They're Coming to Take Me Away Today? We could play that. No, I'm just kidding, Rocky. Yeah, good one. Where are you at? What's your location there?
I am in Utah. You told Debbie that I got her salt for her.
Okay, cool. I will let her know. I don't know where she is right now. I think she's feeding the animals.
Definitely. Oh, well, I gotta go.
Okay, talk to you.
Thanks, bud. See you later.
Bye-bye. Okay, you never know who's going to call. Just a cold call. Have no idea what you're talking about, but he's going to tell us, get rid of them digital watches, get yourself a sweep hand watch. There you go. Yeah, Lou's throwing his digital watch out the window right now. No, it's not digital. It's a sweep hand. Is that a digital watch? Man, I'm going to tell Rocky. When he gets back, I'm going to tell him you get one of them digital watches. Okay, so right-hand sweep of the building. Do you understand that concept? Now, there are ways around that. Let's say you hear somebody crying from the middle of the room and you want to be able to get away. This is where carrying like 550 cord or something in your little survival pack that I never go anywhere without, my little fanny pack. People hate it when I call it that. But I have a man bag that I have all my survival gear. I got like 40 feet of parachute cord. I could tie that to something on the wall and feed it out, and that way I still can get back to my location indicator, turn around, go left hand, and still get out of the structure if I hear somebody calling for help and I can't see them. And another reason you want to stay near the wall is especially in tilt-up buildings. If you understand what I'm talking about, it's where they put the walls up first, put reinforced girders across. You know, if you ever want to see what a tilt-up building is, go to Costco and look up. They put up the walls, they pour concrete, reinforced concrete walls, and then they have these spans that go across. Well, in an earthquake, those will cave in the middle and leave voids along the outside of the wall. Increases your chances of survival. If you're on that outer wall and there's a secondary collapse, you may be in a void, and professional rescuers may find you, even if you're blocked. It'll give you a little bit of room to maneuver around in. So remember, right-hand sweep, stay near the wall. If you have to move, you have to have some way of getting back. Glow sticks. This was something that we used in the Northridge quake. If we heard people crying on the inside and we couldn't see them because it was pitch black in the middle of the night, crack a glow stick, leave it right at the base of the wall. Never lose visual contact with that. You know, I mean, I know if there's a secondary collapse, it may cut off your line of sight to it, but at least you've got that there. You go out, you find out the person's under like four floors of debris, you're not going to be able to help them. You go back to your wall and continue your search. The whole goal of the spontaneous rescuer in an active situation is to help the most people with the limited amount of time. You walk in the door, you look down, and there's a body laying there. It's intact, it's kind of ugly, gooey, you know, you get all that kind of stuff. And you look down. Person's not breathing. You don't see any chest rising. Don't have contact with them, because what if the explosion, if it was a terrorist device, put out some kind of chemical weapon? You don't want to touch them unless you absolutely have to. But hopefully you brought your man bag along. You got your gloves and you got that kind of stuff. You can at least lean down and listen to see if they're breathing. You don't do life-giving breaths. You don't do CPR anymore. Head tilt, chin lift. Listen, if that doesn't work, head tilt, chin lift. If they don't start breathing on their own, you move on. Now, if this is your son-in-law and your daughter's screaming at you, of course you take advanced life-saving tactics. Someone's asking, what do you think of a cement dome building for a bomb shelter? It depends on the cement and the mixture, but a dome's the strongest. I mean, a dome's the strongest structure. I don't use bomb shelters. I'd rather be out of the impact area. I don't want to be stuck in one spot. But yeah, a dome building, you know, it depends on how it's put together, you know. I mean, the protective coatings that we have around our nuclear plants here in California, specifically San Onofre, are designed to withstand the impact of like a 747 hitting them loaded with explosives. So that dome seems to work pretty good. So that was a question from the chat room from Moreland. Okay, so you're going through, you start seeing people, you find somebody that they may not be able to move, they're bleeding from like a chest injury or something. Tear the clothes off themselves, stuff it in the wound, tell them to put direct pressure on it, and if you can't get them up to walk, tell them to wait there. Tell them to, you know, you do what's basic. You don't spend too much time on one person, because you got to do the most good for the most amount of people, or get yourself out of there. Now, if you're with people in your training, you can set up triage areas, you know, outside for immediates and delays. An immediate is somebody who needs, just as it sounds, immediate care, or they're going to die. Delayed is somebody that can sit there and they can stop their own bleeding, or maybe their family, loved ones can put direct pressure on some kind of wound and keep them until the people, you know, that are in immediate need of care. Now, in a mass casualty incident, let's say it's a citywide distress, you're not going to get help. You're going to start writing people off, folks. I hate to say it, but you're going to be doing it. Just like firefighters write off buildings. We got a 50-mile-per-hour wind. We've got a firewall coming at us. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 houses. Those first 5 houses are done. We can defend the 6th. You have to make split-second decisions like that. And it's not you're letting them die. That's not who did it. It's the disaster or the person who triggered the event. And at the meantime, if it is a terrorist event, you got to be the whole eyes in the back of your head looking to see if there's an active shooter that's kind of come through afterwards to finish the job. Now, one of the tactics they like to use is they put a small bomb in a trash can, goes off, takes out 2 or 3 people, wounds another 10. And then as the professional rescuers rush in, they release a larger bomb. They release an agent, a chemical. A lot of decisions going into helping complete strangers, huh? Some people say, but you're a Christian. You have to do that. You have to step up. I don't have to rescue anybody. Now, women and children, I might do a little more than a bunch of guys in a mall. But if I'm with my wife and kids, my goal is to get to my car, get into my trunk, get my shotgun loaded, and get out of Dodge. But if you make that decision to go back into that mall, or you can't get out, let's say you're in a theater, you can't get out, and you're trapped in there, and you need to start doing, you do the same stuff. You prioritize in the same draconian way. Those that can be saved will be saved. Those that are dead, you move them out of the way. You cover them up. And I've always learned the guy screaming the most, I'm dying, I'm dying, like in a bus accident or a traffic collision. They're the ones that are fine. And I always just go over to them, you know, give them a pressure bandage or something, give them, you know, an absorbent bandage and say, here, hold this here, you're going to die, and you better shut up. And then they get real focused then. You have to figure out what your priorities are. Now, up here, let's say it happens on our property, I'm going to be a little more Ricky Rescuer than I would be in a strange place. I know which neighbors are with us and which ones aren't. That sounds horrible, but it's true. Do you think I'm going to risk my life to save the hippie lady that calls the cops every time we shoot our guns off on the shooting range?
No.
Do you really think I'm that stupid? Or what about the old guy across the street that is an old war vet that means well and he'd be over here with us, but he just doesn't have the ability anymore? Yeah, I'm going to try and help him. But if there's a houseload of, you know, if the pastor's neighbors are up here and they're having a Boy Scout troop meeting, I'm going there first. For two reasons. One, the old guy, he's on the edge of life. He's in his autumn years. Sounds mean, huh? These are the decisions rescuers have to make. I know there's a bunch of Boy Scouts over there. I suddenly got deputized little Dutch drones. As an emergency service officer, we were trained to go find the local sport collective and get the football team and deputize them. The next thing we went to was the Home Depot and got the tools to dig out our neighborhood. That was in the training manual for those of us that were emergency service officers. I carried around a book of vouchers. I could do whatever I wanted as a FEMA officer as long as people didn't put a gun in my head and tell me to leave. I'd go to the local high school, where are your football players? You know, if it happens during the day, give them to me. We're going to start digging this. We're going to start digging for survivors. You've got to have that kind of mentality. You do the most good for the most amount of people. You think about the Mexico City earthquake where they're pulling babies out 30 days later. Do you know that more people died going in to get the babies than the babies they saved? Spontaneous rescuers went in. Secondary collapse killed, I don't even, dozens of people, and they saved a handful of babies. Does that sound like a smart thing to do? Does it really? Loma Prieta earthquake, the quake where the Nimitz Freeway fell. Am I confusing earthquakes there? Oh, there's a thing about that one in my head again. Rescuers went in spontaneously and were injured in the aftershocks, killed. But they still get there long before, you know, the guy that gets the pension for doing it. These guys that everybody calls heroes. I'm not a big fan of public safety. Because I know who the real people are that go out there and save lives. And you never know their names. They disappear from the auto wreck. They stop the bleeding. They put out the fire. And then a highway patrolman shows up and he gets credit for it. Seen it happen over and over again. It's happened to me. I don't stick around. I don't like giving names. And I'm not bitter because I didn't get credit for it, but I just hate that. I don't worship these guys. Because most rescues, just like gun owners, guns are 1,000 times more, and I'm exaggerating, hyperbole, being used to stop crime than they are to commit crime, but we never know about it. So you have to have this survival mindset. If you have a rescue mindset, you better make darn sure you know what you're doing, because when you take yourself out, who's going to take care of your family? Do you think all those people in that mall are going to look out for your family when you get killed by a beam hitting you? Or an active shooter sneaks up on you and puts a bullet in your head while you're trying to drag an old lady out? What's your mentality going to be, folks? Are you going to be around for the final fight, or are you going to be taken out in the first blushes of battle? If you have the ability, like if it's a house, like a house fire, I would do a 360 on the house, man. If I hear somebody screaming, if they're screaming, they're alive. I could do a 360 because I don't know what's in the, I don't know if there's a plane stuck in the back of the house and it's about ready to cave in and I go up the stairs and I'm toast. I'm looking out for me first so that I can look out for my family. I got to sneeze. It's starting to tickle. Hang on. Oh, that was bad. Stacy's had it. I've got the sore throat, the cold kind of thing going on. I don't know if it's allergies or what. Oh, that felt good to sneeze. Of course, now the mic's kind of... Good thing I didn't have the camera on. That looked silly a bit. It looked like I was sneezing in Godzilla's butt. But, folks, without a survival mentality, without these skills, and you can get these skills, folks... You don't have to sell your soul to CERT or you know, Obama's new volunteer corps. You can download all these manuals and start doing it yourself. Well, I mean, we're talking about getting our own fire truck up here. I need to check into it, see how that committee's doing. I don't know if we got that fire truck or not. We're training, folks, because we were told by the sheriff, if anything goes on up there, you're on your own for at least 3 days, which means to us, we know it's a lot longer. That's why we store food. You know, they tell you, oh, have enough food. It used to be 3 days, remember? No, you have to have enough food for indefinitely, because they're not, especially if you're in a city, you're done, period. Sorry. I know you're in situations, I need your job, you want to be near your mom, whatever, but if you're in a city, you're done. And I figure a city, anything over 150,000. And even the smaller cities, it will come to you too. The violence will be visited upon you because of all the vile people that are out there that hate you because of who you are. And they've been watching you. They know you're storing food. They know you've got guns and they want them. And they will come in mass to get them. So we got to have a survival mindset. We're getting off on a different topic there, but response to a mass casualty incident. Whether it's a huge car pileup on Tejon Pass going over the Grapevine, a meteorite hits a swim meet that you're at, whatever, chlorine gas leak at a swim meet. I've been called on two of those in my lifetime. Problem with the chlorine gas in the basement of the swimming pool in a school. People come out. Fortunately, nobody died. Or whether it's a full-on false flag terrorist attack on a farmer's market down the street. Get ready for it, people. How are you going to react? Have you even thought it out? Or are you just in your mind, or you know, and I know a lot of people do this, I'm going to be Ricky Rescuer. I told you guys, teasing it a little bit, one mass casualty incident I was at. Remember, a mass casualty incident is anything that overwhelms the local resources in the first few minutes. We were having a softball tournament in a city where I was an EMT, and I was just at a first aid booth there. That's all I was doing, you know, blisters, you know, old people needing to sit down, some glucogen emergencies, and we had a shooting, a gang shooting in the middle of the tournament. Here, let's see what we got here. Hello, who do we have?
Hey, it's Rocky again.
Okay.
Hey, Dutch, I wanted to mention to all the listeners, if you're in the Utah area in Salt Lake, there's a gun show this weekend.
Really, where's it at?
Some kind of convention center. I can't remember what the name of it was. It was on the 21st or the 22nd.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I just wanted to mention that. If anybody's up there don't know about it, there you go.
Okay, if you're in Salt Lake City, go buy Dutch something.
Yeah. Okay,
mini
gotta 14 go. Stuff. Just wanted to mention it here, bud.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, all right, thank you.
Bye. Reminds me of, remember Brett? He doesn't call anymore. It's Rocky's the new Brett. He's like, you know, oh, and by the way, I just remembered. Okay, thanks, Rocky. Oh, that's funny. I forgot completely where I was. What was I talking about? Cheese Whiz or something? What was that? He completely blew my train of thought, man. Oh, we were at a softball tournament, and there was a gang shooting, and there were like a couple people down. And just people going nuts. Everybody's grabbing their babies and running. And it was funny because I heard the gunshots and I thought, oh, somebody threw off some fireworks or something, you know. In the middle of a nice Saturday afternoon, you know. It's funny because it was a national tournament. People from all over the country were there. And I just remember grabbing the bag, running. And I remember this podunk police officer, get down. You can't go in there. They're still shooting. And I'm like, no, they're not. I don't hear any gunfire. This is, you know, after my military experience. This cop was hiding behind his car and was telling me I couldn't go in. And I could see 10 feet on the other side was a woman that had been shot in the belly. And this cop would not, he's like, you're not going in. So finally I said, well, then you're just, you know, sorry. You know, I'm going to tell everybody you're hiding behind your car, wetting your pants while I go out there. And the shooters, it was a drive-by. They were already out of the area. And but a softball game. You know, I'm doing this one to show you how much I hate cops and how wimpy they are. He was actually a sheriff deputy, Riverside County sheriff's deputy. And how cool I am. No, I'm just kidding. But how you've got to be able to look at the situation. Now, had there been actual shooting, no, I wouldn't have gone in. Now, could I have grabbed that lady by her feet behind cover and dragged her in? Possibly. You do that, but I'm not going to run out there because if I go down and it had been, these guys had been good, you know, actual good shots and they shot five or six people instead of two or three, what am I doing? I'm letting them bleed to death because I'm the guy with the knowledge and the big black bag and the backpack and the cell phone that goes directly to the trauma center over at the regional community hospital. I'm not allocating myself in a proper way. I'm not being a good steward of my skills. And neither are you. One, if you don't get these skills, and two, if you apply yourself and push yourself into these situations blindly. In the first half hour, we said something like, "Fools rush in where angels dare to tread." But you get the point. You've got to have a working knowledge of how mechanics of injury, attitudes of terrorism, a train wreck. I've worked two train wrecks in my life, and the first one I screwed up on. I rushed in. I was a brand new EMT. I was like, oh yeah, I get to do this. And we were told that there were a bunch of illegal aliens on the train that were trapped in the debris from the first responding units. And because we were mutual aid, it was the next county over. I rushed right in. And there were so many chemical cars. There were so many. And I had all the training. I knew what I was doing, but I focused on saving lives because I saw this guy's hand sticking out of the rubble. It ended up just being his hand. There was nothing attached to it, his forearm. And I ran over there to, you know, go grab that and dig the guy out and save a life instead of doing what was right. I didn't step back, do a triage of the situation. I didn't look at the big chemicals on there and look at my book to see what they were. I didn't wait to put on my CBA, my contained breathing apparatus. SCBA, a self-contained breathing apparatus. I got written up for it, all this stuff. I knew a fire marshal who pulls up on a house. This lady's screaming, my babies is inside. So without putting on his SCBA, he runs inside and he rescues a toddler, and the other one died. Rescues a toddler, comes out, he's all sick, he's in the paper, in the media, and they suspended him for 30 days. Because the fire department had rules and protocols to save his life, because he was more important than that baby. And it turned out the lady set fire to her own house. And she was trying to kill her kids to get insurance money. She had insurance on her kids through something. He almost died because of it. I just remember pulling up and seeing an arson investigator. He was actually a fire marshal, correction, laying on the ground in breathing distress, because he went in with just his little blue uniform on. Because the lady's like, my babies. And it ended up being an insurance scam and a murder. It happens. You get target focus, you get tunnel vision, and I'm not saying it won't happen to me again, but we've got to maintain that. We have a duty and a responsibility. We have to have to do the most good for the most people. We have to survive what the New World Order is throwing at us so we can be soldiers for Christ in this, the second war of federal aggression, and push forward the holy cause of liberty. You got to get this training. We're doing it this weekend. And what you just got was 1 hour. It took me an hour and a half to do it with the stuff, but that's just 1 hour. I didn't even get halfway through the stack. I got a PowerPoint presentation and everything of what we're going to go over. And we're going to continue this type of training. I want to go shoot. When are we going to shoot? Well, there are professional shooting ranges all around us where we tell people that we bring those instructors in on your own time. Go get tactical weapons training. Go get individual training so that you're ready when we do team training. And they don't. And then when we do team tactics with some of these people, they just don't get it. And people are like, I don't want to learn how to, do triage a building. I'm not a firefighter. Okay. Yeah, we'll see. But those that do show up, I know I can count on them. Those that stand shoulder to shoulder with me and realize that if we learn these small things, the great things, God will reward us, right? Just the same thing. You're talking about having a man bag. People joke about that. I carry this man bag everywhere we go. I throw it in the back of the car. It's got my basic stuff in it. Basic stuff to do a little bit of good for as many people as I can, but mostly importantly for myself and my family. Do you have that survival mindset? Are you seeking to have it if you know you don't? Or are you one of those people that thinks you don't need it? Do you don't know you don't know, or do you do know you don't know? Did I need to say that slower? Do you don't know you don't know, or do you do know you don't know? Because that's the first step. Admitting that you are not where you need to be to serve the Lord. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound like the drill sergeant. I never was a drill sergeant. I don't think I could be one. I don't like to polish stuff. I don't like to get up before everybody else either. But are you over there saying I'm a drill sergeant?
I said you could be one.
You need to get in the corner, lady. Oh, sorry. See, I don't make you do push-ups. I'll put you in the corner. Stacy's over there telling me I'm a drill sergeant. But I think the time for being nice to everybody, just like I said, in making these decisions in triage in a mass casualty incident. I'm sorry about thin-skinned people. No, I'm not. I keep saying I'm sorry. I'm not sorry about thin-skinned people. I'm not gonna play around them. I'm not gonna pussyfoot around. I'm not gonna dance around the subject. It's just as critical deciding whether or not to rush into that burning building as it is to decide whether or not you're gonna use your CCW and pull that weapon and cap that guy across the street. Or are you gonna say, what's the point? Who's the victim here? Am I gonna get drawn into this? Will I exacerbate the situation by putting another round in the air? We have to make those decisions because it is now an us or them kind of thing. It is now us or them, folks. They've chosen to be on the other side of the line. We didn't push them there. I do have contempt for the majority of Americans. When I walk through a mall, I'm looking at exits, I'm looking at egress, I'm looking at stuff to get behind, and I'm doing it constantly. Like we were talking earlier, and everything's a teachable moment. Maybe I am a drill sergeant. When my kids walk into a store and pick something up without asking permission, I go, what are you doing? How do you know what that is? What if that was booby-trapped? You just killed everybody in this room. You don't touch things you don't know what they are. Unless you put it there or I told you to go pick it up, you don't do it. Hmm? What are you doing?
He is a drill sergeant.
Well, if that's what it takes to keep us all alive, then so be it. I see people all the time that'll walk up and see something that somebody threw on their lawn. You go, dang kids, and they'll pick it up and shake it. How do you know it's not a device? Southern California, someone is still going around, and this is not in the media, so you can call me a liar all you want. They're taking mag lights, rigging them to explode, and leaving them at accident scenes. You know, you're on the freeway, you see all the lights, you see everybody. They're going slow. They just reach down, and they throw it out. And what happens is when you turn the button on, it explodes. There have been several firemen and policemen and tow truck operators that have lost hands and been severely injured by this mag light attacker. It's somebody who has a grudge against public safety, so who knows? Could be a gang initiation thing.
It's possible.
They warned us of this 10, 15 years ago, and it's still happening. When I talk to my friends in public safety, everyone's like, oh yeah, it happened a couple months ago. Now they're getting smart, and they call out the destructive device people. Nobody's picking up mag lights going, hey, look, look what I did today. Wow. I'll bring it down over here. Well, folks, that ends a week. Almost a week. I think I missed a day, maybe 2 days here. Sick and tired. I think I only did 3 days this week. But keep praying, keep supporting us, keep sending the money, and we'll stay on the air. We have bills to pay. We have things to keep up. I love giving you this information, but I can't do it for free, folks. I can't afford to pay the electric bills. I can't afford to pay the bills. I can't afford to send the money over to those great folks over at Liberty Tree Radio, and we want to make sure that they get paid for their efforts over there. It's a biblical concept. Those folks over at Liberty Tree Radio deserve to be paid for the efforts they take to put us on the air. So you can either donate through them, or you can donate through us. Folks, remember what I've taught you today. It's just the tip of the iceberg. Seek it out. Find it. Maybe Lou can put this stuff up on the forum tomorrow. I don't know. We're going to be busy tomorrow doing training. Remember, if you're coming tomorrow, you better email me or text me or something, because I want to make sure I make enough packets. And there will be a training in the playground tomorrow. God bless you and all you do. And remember, the sword is heavy and the battle is hard, but victory belongs to the Lord alone.
What to do, friends? Now tell me right out loud. What are you supposed to do when you see the flash?
Duck and cover.